If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Darkness. I'm Tim Dennis, in for Dave Schrader on a Way Back Wednesday. In other words, it's an encore presentation. Thank you for all your thoughts and prayers. First of all, I want to thank each and every one of you for them. I'm dealing with a little bit of what we call pre-pneumonia. That's the medical term, pre-pneumonia. A good deep case of bronchitis. It's never been known to kill anybody as far as I know. Of course, it probably has, but not me, and not anytime soon. So thank you, everybody, for your notes, your emails, your messages. It's greatly appreciated, but I'm still working, and I'm still getting things done. So I appreciate that. Today's episode is a good one, and we go in the Wayback Machine today, and we visit conspiracy theories, and we talk a little bit about paranormal beliefs with a couple of our guests. Our first guest is a former professional wrestler, kind of appropriate being on the Jericho Network here on Podcast One, and former governor of the state of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura. We talk with him in the first hour about conspiracy theories, and we get a little out there with the former governor. In the second part of the program today, we sit down with the king of late night paranormal talk radio, and that is George Norrie. And we speak to him about his theories on the paranormal, that coming up in the second half of the program today. So sit back, relax, enjoy, and here is Beyond the Darkness.
Good evening and welcome back. This is another edition of Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Mally Fox, Mr. Tim Dennis. Good evening, kids.
Good evening.
We've got a packed week this week. We got a lot of great interviews coming up. A few moments from now, we're going to be talking to former Governor Jesse Ventura. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to get into this interview very quickly tonight because this hour is going to fly by. For any of you that have been living in a cave or perhaps abducted by aliens and just returned to the planet Earth, our guest this evening is Jesse Ventura, the former independent governor of Minnesota. He's also a former U.S. Navy SEAL, professional wrestler, movie actor, a visiting fellow at Harvard Kennedy School of Government, and the New York Times best-selling author of 5 books. He's currently the host and executive producer of True TV's Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. He has a reputation as the ultimate nonpartisan truth seeker. He has no qualms about questioning authority, and he has a brand new book that's out on the market right now. That book is 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Darkness Radio, Governor Jesse Ventura. Good evening, sir.
Thank you. It's great to be here, but I can't believe that my 63 documents rate up with aliens.
Well, you're right up there with us, you know.
I mean, you know, these are documents that the government produced. There's nothing, hidden about them other than they're documents hidden in the government archives that they don't want you to see.
Well, and that's what we wanted to talk to you about. Between your TV series, which I thought was fascinating, and I got to tell you, you know, buying into conspiracy theories, we've heard, you know, everything from Kennedy to the 9/11, and hearing people just kind of banter about it on talk radio, and actually watching you delve into these episodes of the show, really kind of took me aback watching how much information you were able to get and from incredibly good sources and to find the things that you did.
What's interesting about the show is we had to change it initially because we were initially going to show both sides of the conspiracy, and generally one side is the government. But when you can't get a question answered or get virtually no cooperation from the government in any way, shape, or form, it caused us to have to change the show on the run, on the first show. We realized that we weren't going to be able to talk to anyone from the government. They wouldn't provide anyone generally. And so we thought, well, let's show it strictly from the conspiracy side then. We all know what the government's conspiracy theory is, because theirs generally is that also. It's only a conspiracy theory. They just happen to be the official source, so we tend to believe theirs more.
And what I find fascinating about the books is the way that you delve into it. You go at it balls to the wall. There's no pulling back and no, you know, trying to glad hand anybody in what you do, which is what I respected about your job that you did here as governor for the state of Minnesota as well. It was refreshing to see somebody go in and just take the bull by the horns. Now, you, as a Navy SEAL, an actor, a wrestler, what tilted you into the vein of wanting to get into government and politics yourself?
Well, yeah, I really fell into it. It was not by design or anything. It just kind of happened, I guess. I originally got into it as mayor of Brooklyn Park, where we as a neighborhood got into a fight with our city council, and I realized the only way you can change government is from the inside, not the outside. So I took on a 20-year incumbent in Brooklyn Park and defeated him 67% to 33 and served from 90 to 94. Then I went back in the private sector, and I was doing talk radio, and we had budget surpluses, and I was very angry because they spent them like kids in a candy store, and I felt they should be given back, that they already had a budget, they should live within that budget, and any surplus because of a bold economy should be returned. And so I ran for governor. I kind of boxed myself in a corner where I had to run, but I ran naturally to win, and I did. And I wish I could have accomplished a few other things, that, like right now, we're hurting in our economy and in our revenue, and I had a total fix for doing many things, and I couldn't get anyone in the government to even pay attention, and that was to legalize sports betting. I met with the seven Indian tribe chiefs, and they all gave me their blessing. They said, we have no problem. It's a different gambler. And then I met with law enforcement and found out that it's a $3 billion a year industry in Minnesota, and that if we just brought it above board and collected 10% like a bookie, we'd make $300 million a year into the state coffers. We could build a lot of stadiums with that money, couldn't we?
And fix a lot of schools.
Yeah, and roads and things of that nature. I couldn't get anyone to even react over there to that. And it had the blessing of the seven chiefs.
Well, let's start talking with that, because that's what I wanted to kind of lead into, is your foray into government politics and how it started to change your perspective, and then getting into the information that you find out in your books. When you start trying to raise this image and bring out this information, which, I mean, it clearly makes sense. You're bringing a way to take something that's going on already, with or without the blessing of the Indian Nation, or without the blessing of our government, and is a $3 billion business, and you're figuring out a way to legalize it and capitalize on that so that our state could become a stronger and more powerful state. What do you believe had the government hold off on that? Why do you think that you're running into these roadblocks?
Well, for one thing, you have a huge influx of religion into government, and religious moral beliefs, so that you've got that to deal with, that the gambling's illegal, we think it's morally wrong, and all the people that oppose it, which to me is irrelevant. You got certainly a huge amount that do it, and mind your own business. Nobody makes you gamble. You choose to do it, and it's happening anyway. So you always deal with that element.
And isn't that interesting that I don't think I've been in a state with a Catholic church that doesn't run bingo and gambling events and
Well, after doing this book, I want to name our country the United States of Hypocrisy.
It's probably a pretty good fit.
Because we talk one thing, but our documents and our actions are the direct opposite of what we talk in this country.
we're now growing up and doing the work that you did. I mean, you were obviously aware of the conspiracy theories behind the Kennedy assassination and Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. And
well, I grew to read. I actually learned about them when wrestling changed and we went to flying around in airplanes. And I started doing nothing but reading because I sat in airports every day.
When you're starting to research these type of things, I mean, did it have an impact to you then, or was it just interesting, fun reading?
Both. It was interesting and fun. It really, what happened was when I got out of the service, I heard Mark Lane speak at a junior college, and he was the first person who ever questioned the Warren Report. And as I listened to him, I thought, because I was like 12 years old when it happened, and of course you believe everything that they told you at 12. And this was the first person I ever heard questioning the government's official position. And then when I started to read about it and look at things from a common sense perspective, it's so crystal clear that Oswald was set up and that Oswald was just what he said he was, a patsy. You know what? The easiest way to judge it is by where he was arrested. Now, think of this. You had the president murdered an hour earlier. You had a Dallas police officer murdered a half hour earlier. Now, Oswald was seen by a fellow merchant on the street walking into a movie theater and not buying a ticket. That was the only thing this guy reported to the police. And yet, the police show up with 10 or 12 squad cars, 19 police officers, and the media, all to arrest a man who didn't buy a 35-cent ticket to get into an afternoon movie at the Texas Theater. Now, does that seem at all logical?
Not at all. Like, they were definitely on a witch hunt and
there
were being pointed in a direction.
It's clear. Just that alone tells you, come on. If you got a call at the police station after the murder of the president and a murder of a police officer of somebody reporting someone not paying to get into the movie theater, what do you think that dispatcher is going to say? We'll get there in about a day.
Right.
You know, and yet they send 20-some cops, a dozen squad cars, and the media to go arrest a man who didn't buy a ticket to get in the theater.
When you're getting involved now into politics yourself, did you have any idea how dirty it was a business?
It's the dirty. I've told people that politics makes pro wrestling look like a walk in the park.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I still laugh when Ric Flair came to me. I was governor, and Ric Flair and Gene Okerlund from wrestling stopped by, and Ric was considering running for governor of North Carolina. He saw my success, and I guess he felt that he might be able to do it too. And so he was discussing with me his options on doing it, and I said to him, I said, Rick, do you have anything in your background that they can drudge up? Because you need to come clean before you run. Don't let them catch you. Tell everything you've done, because that way, if you do that, the public knows then who you are, and then the media can't pull anything out of the hat on you. And when Flair told me he had over 100 speeding tickets,
oof.
I said, you can't run for governor. I said, they'll destroy you. I said, that is so flagrant thumbing your nose at the authority, it's absurd. You can't do it. And fortunately, I think he listened to my advice and he did not run. But no, I told Rick, I said politics is way worse than any type of thing you'll get in pro wrestling or anything like that.
No, was it even on that level as
cutthroat as you can get?
Was it that on that level as well, even just being the mayor?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was in many ways even worse because I took on a good old boy network. No, and the bad part about it is your worst enemies are the ones that come up to you and pat you on the back and befriend you. That's how sleazy it is.
And then you
find out later that they undermined everything you wanted to do, all while patting you on the back and pretending to be your friend.
Sounds like working in radio.
Well, I've worked in radio. Put it this way, it's on par with the record business.
Right.
That is dirty.
And you know how dirty that business right. was and is.
Now, you put yourself through 4 years of being a mayor. You take yourself out into the private sector. At what point does Jesse Ventura go, you know what? I'm going to go for governor.
When when I complained about the surpluses and I said that I would give them back, and I happened to say on the radio, you know, maybe I should run for governor. And it snowballed. And then I was caught because I knew in talk radio you can't lose your credibility.
Right. And so
I had to run, basically. And then when I made the decision to run, of course, I naturally run to win. I don't run to come in second. And I was fortunate enough. Things fell in their place, and the timing was correct, and our timing was terrific, and we peaked at the right time in November, and I upset the apple cart and defeated the Democrats and Republicans in a major election for not once but twice now.
How did that affect your life when you had that big a turn? Now, I've heard that you were actually questioned by government officials on how you were able to swing that kind of vote and to get that many people involved.
Well, it was more, I was investigated by the Central Intelligence Agency.
The CIA got involved?
About 3 weeks after I was in office, I was requested to the bowels of the Capitol before the legislature came in to participate in a question and answer thing with the 23 members of the CIA. And so I did it, and I found it interesting, and all they wanted to know about was, how did I pull it off? How did I succeed?
The CIA had...
They wanted to know to prevent it from ever happening again. I don't know if they just wanted to know it. Like, I called my friend Dick Marcinko, who created SEAL Team 6, that team you hear so much about
right.
today. Dick created them, and I called Dick, and I asked Dick what he thought, and he said, well, clearly they didn't see you coming, and so they're probably looking to see if there's more of you on the horizon. If this is a trend.
It just seems interesting to me that the CIA took notice of the governor of Minnesota and wanted to understand how you did what you did. I mean, it seemed pretty basic. You weren't putting out the same political rhetoric and garbage that we'd heard for decades. And you came out, you were honest, and you were Jesse Ventura. And I think that's what won the popular vote, was the fact that we heard the breath of somebody who was walking in our shoes.
Well, maybe they didn't pay attention clearly, and it just caught them and blindsided them that how did this independent beat the two-party system?
Were you ever informed that it wouldn't happen if you tried to run a second term?
No, never.
So there was never any
threat or
implication?
No, absolutely. Okay. Let me be clear. They were as courteous as you'd ever want to be. I was always addressed as governor. I was given everything a governor's supposed to get from them. I've met with the CIA on multiple occasions. I also met with them when I went to Cuba and met with Fidel Castro, which I fully expected. You always expect
sure.
to be debriefed by the intelligence community. And so, and in fact, I will tell you this now. The head guy of the CIA, and I won't mention names in our area here, he told me after 9/11, he said, you know, it was interesting, Governor? And I said, what was that? He said, you were the only governor that bothered to call me after 9/11 to find out what I knew. Because I did. I called to try to get information the day 9/11 happened. I called this person of the CIA that I have to have contact with as a governor, and I asked him, what do you know? What can you tell me? What do I need to know? Because they're supposed to have intelligence. And he told me I was the only governor that bothered to call him. And I said, well, that's probably because I'm the only governor that served in the special forces.
Do you believe that we as Americans have the power to, since your election, have the power to actually put who we want in office? Or do you think that that has been stolen away from us now?
I think it's very scary that it's been stolen away with electronic voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can be hacked into like any computer. We need to get rid of them universally. We need to go back to the simple method of each vote be hand counted. I know that it takes longer and it's a lot of work, but it's the only true fair way, because these machines can be totally manipulated. You have no idea. They're equivalent to going to an ATM and it doesn't offer you a receipt. You would not do that.
Right.
And these are the same thing. You have no way of ensuring, of knowing when you press the button that it was recorded to the candidate of your choice. And then they have no way to do a recount, because all it does is give them numbers like an adding machine.
How do we then change and rebalance this country Governor Ventura, knowing that the power is actually being taken and stripped away from us and being put into the hands of other people. And wouldn't other people, though, stand up and say that, hey, look, Richard Daley, you know, stole the elections over and over with President Kennedy with dead people and gangsters?
The easy way is to nip it in the bud and, I believe, stop electing Democrats and Republicans, because they're the problem, not the solution. They've been in charge of our country now the whole century. And look at the shape we're in. Not very good.
Not at all.
Well, Governor, let me...
And yet they want to blame us. They want to point the fingers at each other. And they want to play these games with us. When they are the ones at fault, we have to abolish the political parties. That's the only hope. John Adams said it. Tom Jefferson and George Washington. That political parties would be the downfall of the country. And we're not listening to them. We need to abolish political parties.
Governor, what is your opinion of Ron Paul running on a Republican ticket then? Because he seems like he's outside the box and that he's someone that really shouldn't belong to a party.
Well, Ron Paul, I heard, originally ran as a libertarian. And he probably truly is more of a libertarian than he is a Republican. I guess he just runs as a Republican. It must be easier to get elected as one.
So if Ron Paul came up to you tomorrow and said, Governor, I want you on my team as a vice presidential candidate, is that something that you could be swayed to, being he's aligned with Republicans now?
No. I've already made that clear that he would have to disassociate and quit the Republican Party completely. I will not do anything that deals with these two parties. I view these two parties as the enemy of our country. I have T-shirts that I sell on my website, weaintgottimetobleed.com, and it states what I state. It's got my name on it and everything. It says, I love my country, but I don't love my government.
I want to ask real quickly, Governor Ventura, the TV show Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura, is that coming back for another season?
They tell me it is, but they haven't negotiated with me yet.
All right, and the books are out right now, American Conspiracies, which was phenomenal, and the brand new book, 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. And Governor Ventura is in town. He's going to be doing some book signings June 7th. That's tomorrow from 7 to 9 at Borders at Rosedale Center in Roseville, Minnesota. June 11th at the Mall of America Barnes & Noble on Bloomington, Minnesota. And on June 13th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Barnes & Noble at the Apache Mall in Rochester, Minnesota. We'll mention those again throughout the night. You mentioned SEAL Team 6, which is getting a lot of public acknowledgement right now, Governor Ventura. And you talk a lot in your books about the 9/11 conspiracy. You had read the information within a few hours.
Within 2 hours, the Daily Herald in England had published an article that had pretty much said that they believed Osama bin Laden had died in 2002 of kidney disease. Now, Dave, go ahead and follow up with your question.
Well, right. You've got these reports that he had died. There's photographs of Osama bin Laden that don't match up. Facial recognition. I mean, there's changes. He's wearing jewelry in the later pictures. When I guess that's some kind of
it's against his sect of Islam to wear any type of jewelry, any gold jewelry whatsoever.
And all of a sudden there's these changes in this character. Researching and going into the conspiracies, what are your thoughts on, was Osama bin Laden already dead, and was this a stand-in that, in effect, the United States had put in?
I don't know. You know, and it's a great question, and I'll tell you why it's a great question. First of all, let me state this. The Navy SEALs are the best we have. They will get the job done. If the intelligence is correct, the chances are they will be successful. And they still operate today, I believe, the way they did in Vietnam, the way we did then. And that is, when we go into a situation like this, the people that send us know there's a strong likelihood that people are going to die. Because when you call in the SEALs, and especially Team 6, they're going to give one opportunity to surrender. If you fail to exercise that opportunity, you will be eliminated, because they're going to be on a tight time schedule and they are going to have to move, because we always put the men over the mission. We want to get out safely if there's any feasible way impossible, and we want to have no contact with the enemy unless it's designed and thought out beforehand. So having said that, the SEALs will be successful if bin Laden and they got him, they did. But I have a thing in the pit of my stomach because my government, let's throw the SEALs out of the equation now, let's get the knuckle draggers, the people that were actually in the room, gone, and let's go to politics. My government has lied to me so often in the last decade. They lied to me about the murder of Pat Tillman. They lied about the rescue of Jessica Lynch. They lied about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. They lied about Iraq with ties to Al-Qaeda. None of it true. So when my government tells me they did this in a secretive way, I have my doubts.
Could you tell me?
It's like anyone. If you meet someone 10 years ago and the person tells you five bold-faced lies, if they tell you something 8 years later, chances are you're going to be skeptical, aren't you?
No doubt. No doubt. Could you tell me, though, what would be, just kind of going outside the box and having done all the research you have on conspiracies, what would be the advantage to the United States to put an Osama bin Laden impersonator in power and continue that berating in the videos? And what
because
does that gain?
They needed somebody, a boogeyman. We've been at war. Think of this for a moment. In my lifetime, I will be 60 this summer. I wasn't even here in World War II. We've been at war over half my life. We are the biggest war country on the planet. Over half my life, we've been at war. The thing that disturbed me most about the 2010 elections, the wars weren't even on the menu.
Right.
They weren't even discussed. They've got us so used to being at war, we now accept it, like eating and sleeping.
Do you believe that this was a way for us to try to rebuild confidence in America, and that it seems pretty politically altered that, wow, right when things are going kind of south for our president, we get the number one boogeyman out there. Wow, suddenly in his reign, we caught the bad guy.
All of a sudden, we love and trust our government again,
right,
and they're all heroes. And it all comes back to what Benjamin Franklin said. You know what that was? Benjamin Franklin said, people who sell their liberty for security will end up with neither. And that's what we're doing in our country right now. We're selling our liberties, trying to get secure from our government. And I got news for you. Liberty is security. If you give up your liberties, you will have nothing.
Our guest this evening, Governor Jesse Ventura, his new book, 63 Documents the Government Doesn't Want You to Read. When you started doing the research into these conspiracy theories and you started to uncover the information that you did regarding the 9/11, walk me through how, as a patriot, somebody who's fought for our country, somebody who's represented our country in political venues, how did that start to make you feel and how did it affect you as an American citizen?
You know, when it happened, I, like everyone, bought it completely, you know, and you're so stunned that you really don't think clearly and you don't analyze things that happened immediately after. So I just went on military mode and felt we're back at war. My job, I was the commander-in-chief of the Minnesota National Guard, and my job is to ensure I keep the state of Minnesota as safe as I possibly can, above any and all other things. It really, when I started to question it, was when I got out of office. I got out of office in 2003, and it was shortly thereafter that President Bush announced we were going to invade Iraq, and that was the key for me. All of a sudden, I went back to my military thinking, and I went, Iraq? There wasn't one of these hijackers that was from Iraq. Why would we invade Iraq? I mean, if we were going to invade someone, they were mostly all Saudis. I think we would invade Saudi Arabia.
Right.
And yet we're now going to go into Iraq, which had nothing to do, in my opinion, even at that time, with 9/11. And it was at that point that I started going, wait a minute, is there a bigger agenda here? And being a Vietnam veteran, I started thinking, oh, no, here we go again. And I'm completely correct today. In my opinion. Oh, no. People that say these wars aren't Vietnam, they certainly are.
Does it make you just want to pack up and move to another country with realizing what our country is doing?
I have.
Oh, well, that's true. Mexico. Right?
I live half the year down in Mexico. And when I go down there, I disconnect from the United States as much as possible. I call it flushing my brain out. I don't watch TV down there. I don't watch the news. And I don't follow at all what the country does when I go down there. And I have to tell you, it's very refreshing.
How did it affect you as a man who has fought for our country to realize that this had been...
It affects me in that I look and go, my generation, didn't we learn from Vietnam? Weren't we the ones that were going to be different? But then, of course, I realize the leaders of this generation are not the ones who went to Vietnam. George Bush and Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney had 5 deferments, and they're the leaders. The very people who didn't have the courage themselves to go fight in Vietnam, they now send young people to go fight. I was asked one time by a right-wing talk show host how difficult it would be to be the president and send people to war. And I said, oh, no, that's not a difficult decision at all. And he was mystified. He said, how can that not be a difficult decision? I said, easy. I said, a war is justified if you're willing to send your children. It's that simple. If you're not willing to send your kids to the war, then you have no right to send anyone else's.
That's true.
And that's how easy it is. And when you look at people like George Bush and Dick Cheney, they would have nothing to do with the war. They ran from it. They hid from it. And yet they were so eager. And now they've brought torture in. And I can speak to that also. I've been waterboarded. I know what it is. I was waterboarded in SEER school, Survival Escape Resistance Evasion. It was a required school if you were going into the combat zone of Vietnam. And they essentially waterboarded everybody there.
Do you think that that's an essential part? I mean, there's so many people that came down, oh, we can't torture the bad guys, you know, the people that we've captured that have this information. We can't torture to get this information, but do the ends justify the means?
First of all, tortured information isn't believable. Why do you think we don't let the police do it?
Right.
Because if you're being tortured, you will say whatever it is to stop the torture at some point. So it's not reliable evidence. You don't get confessions out of torturing. You get what you want to hear out of torturing.
Now, do you believe that part of the reason we were so dumbed down for the election and that the war wasn't as big a deal? I know you talk about the CIA and their work in controlling Americans and controlling people.
Yeah.
Do you think that there is something in play? Are they dumbing us down?
I think the dumbing down even goes beyond that. Listen to this for a moment. Do you drink fluoride water?
Unfortunately.
Well, why did they put fluoride in the water? They told us it was for our teeth, right?
Right, right.
Well, can't we take responsibility and brush our own teeth and use mouthwash? We don't need the government to do that, do we?
Nope.
Well, do you want to know who the first person was to put fluoride in water?
Sure.
The Nazis. Now, I'll tell you why. Do you know what fluoride is the 90% main ingredient to?
Nope.
Prozac. So when you're drinking fluoride water, you're essentially drinking liquid Prozac. That's called the dumbing down of society.
Yeah, I was just saying, no wonder we're all messed up in this country.
Well, think about that.
Sure.
You know, and yet they force it upon us. And they tell us it's for our teeth. I don't need the government taking care of my teeth. I'll take care of my own teeth.
That's right. So do you think that then there is something that's being employed, that they're trying to control us through these methods?
That way. I mean, I went down doing my TV show. One day we were doing B-roll. And we went down to 1st and Washington Avenue here in Minneapolis just to get a look at the TV cameras they got on corners now. There wasn't one. There was 4. On 1st Avenue in Washington in downtown Minneapolis, there are 4 television cameras viewing you on a daily basis.
And that was part of your Big Brother episode, right, Governor?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this, because there's a story that came out today that the city of Duluth, Georgia, is employing the Iron Sky system to catch criminals, okay?
What's that?
Iron Sky is kind of like the concept you're talking about. What it is cameras set up at strategic points throughout the city to get a good look at what's going on within the city, and that they claim this is going to help with criminal apprehension.
Well, it's also going to help with watching you.
Right. And
you know, are we that afraid? See, again, I go back to Ben Franklin. If we give up our liberties for security, we will have neither.
So why, other than the whole...
Stop this.
Right.
This is the United States of America. We're supposed to be freedom. Part of freedom is the freedom to be stupid, unfortunately. You cannot protect, like I used to say as governor of Minnesota, you can't legislate stupidity. People are going to do stupid things. You can't make every stupid thing against the law.
If you're a resident of Duluth, Georgia, anywhere from Duluth, Georgia, or even to the national level of trying to pass the Patriot Act again or get it to re-ratified, anything from that, from a local level to a national level, how do you step up and tell government we don't want it?
Well, the easy way is as simple as the nose on your face, but it's also as difficult as climbing Mount Everest. And you know what that is? Stop voting for Democrats and Republicans. Vote for anyone else. We have to break the stranglehold of the two-party dictatorship. These parties are destroying our country. And that's as simple as it is. We have to root them out. There's two simple ways we could start. On every ballot in the United States, they should offer a choice at the bottom that says none of the above, which is actually a vote for no confidence in government. Now imagine hypothetically if, say, you're the Republican and you ran against your Democratic opponent and you beat him, but you actually lost to none of the above. Wouldn't that make you rethink your position a little?
Well, right, but their positions change once they get into office.
Need to stop putting political parties on the ballot. Put only names.
That makes sense.
Because right now you're voting for the party, not the person. You don't need to know who the person is. I think we need to switch that and reverse that and make it so, yes, you must have a need to know who the person is.
The last 10, 11 minutes is going to go by so fast here, Governor. What do you hope with the book that you have out right now, 63 documents the government doesn't want you to read? What do you really want people to get from this book?
Well, I would hope that they would see, like I'm seeing, that the rhetoric that we get on television and all the talk that we get from our elected leaders is just that. Behind the scenes, they're doing some pretty dastardly things on a regular basis. And they need to be held accountable. I mean, I kind of look at the situation we have with Roger Clemens, with Barry Bonds, and formerly with Martha Stewart. All three of them, Stewart did go to jail, the other two may, are going to jail for lying to the government. Now, so if we lie to the government, we go to jail? Well, what happens when they lie to us?
Right, who's holding the government accountable?
Yeah. How come they're not penalized? How come they aren't forced to be truthful? And that's the point of this book. I want people to read these documents, and believe me, it wasn't an easy book to write. It was difficult as hell, you know, to read that my tax dollars are being spent on some of the things that they've done in government that are literally criminal, that people should have gone to jail for. And yet they get off scot-free because the government is such a bureaucracy, the left hand never knows half the time what the right hand is doing.
What is your opinion on the whole WikiLeaks thing?
Well, I think WikiLeaks are heroes. Because to me, look at what my book tells you. Last year alone, the government declared 16 million documents top secret. That's astounding. 16 million documents I can't see? Well, I had a top secret security clearance when I was a Navy SEAL. I've been a mayor. I've been a governor. At what point did I lose my security clearance? When I became a civilian?
Right, and that should be the people that are allowed to see these things, to know how the government's running.
I can't see them. I'm a civilian. I'm a regular taxpaying person. Now, I had a top secret clearance when I was in SEAL team. But yet, and that's my point, every document, we have every right to know about them. Certainly some have to be timely. I understand that. But within 3 years of the event, when the water's over the bridge, you can state what happened. The point is, we have every right to know, because everything our government does, they do with our tax dollars. And we have every right to know what they're spending them on.
Governor, we live in an era of whistleblowers, and where things like WikiLeaks, and they do a great service, where these documents come to light. Why, if you were going to do dastardly things to your own people, would you put it on a piece of paper?
I don't know. And it's the classic case of killing the messenger. We need to worry about Private Bradley Manning right now. He is being held in solitary confinement. He is not being charged. For all we know, they're torturing him, because we do now torture in our country. I can no longer hold my head high as a veteran. We're a country that tortures. And they may be torturing him. And look at the situation. He was a whistleblower who blew the whistle on war crime. The first thing you saw was that helicopter gunship that murdered those civilians down on the street corner. Now Bradley Manning is in jail, and these guys, what happened to them? Did they get medals?
Was there, out of the WikiLeaks cables that you got and that you've read, was there a particular cable that shocked you or really upset you?
Oh, the one of the helicopter gunship.
So that would be the main one?
That's the top one, and that's the first one that was released. And yet this guy's in jail, and the people that were shooting the machine guns aren't?
How do you suggest then, Governor, that what can we do as civilians to get this turned around, to get them out?
Well, again, stop. The problem of our country is the Democrats and Republicans have been in charge for the last century. It's that simple. But again, it's like climbing Mount Everest. We have to destroy these two political parties. I'm at war with them. My T-shirts that I sell on my website, it says, Jesse Ventura, I love my country, not my government. And I think you can make that distinction. If you don't believe it, go talk to the Germans in the 30s.
Now, you actually have a lawsuit against the TSA, is that correct?
That's correct. I filed it sometime in January. It happened because last summer I was flying doing my TV show, and at first, I have metal in my body. So when I go through the metal detector, I had to be wanded, and I put up with it. But it started to bother me because I started to feel comfortable being searched. And I don't think anyone in a free country should feel comfortable being searched. Do you follow that?
I do.
How do you respond?
Then they went, at the end of the summer, they went to this enhanced search where you either get patted down or you go into the microwave, the X-ray machine. Well, I'm not going to go in that four times a week. That's dangerous. I don't care what they say. And to the pat down, I had it done once. It is a sexual assault. I immediately, when I got home, I called my attorney and I said, I want to bring a lawsuit. I will never let them do that to me again. And I will not fly in this country till we get resolution to my Fourth Amendment rights.
Now, Governor, the state of Texas is already starting to do the anti-groping law thing as far as the TSA goes in their state. How do you suggest we go from state to state? Because, mind you, the TSA is a federal organization.
Right.
How do we take back states' rights and get every state in the nation to enforce that anti-groping law so that the TSA is no longer valid?
One way to start is to pose this question. Why is it the government's job to provide security for the airlines who are private sector businesses?
That's a good question.
Why doesn't the airlines provide their own security?
And
that way I can have a relationship here with Delta Airlines. That's who I would fly 90% of the time. And they would know Governor Ventura is a good customer. I wouldn't have to be searched or anything.
I think the only reason the government can claim that they can put the TSA there is because you are traveling from state to state and that there's no real clear jurisdiction there, so they feel they have to fill in. Would that be accurate?
Well, I don't know, but they're private sector businesses. Why don't they have their own security?
Well, do you think, though, that with the increased airport security, I mean, you don't feel that that is making us safer?
No, I don't think it has any impact at all. Who have they caught? Nobody.
Well, right, but if you believe the behind the scenes,
you know, the thing that I was trained as a SEAL.
What's that?
I was trained that you never patternize yourself. In other words, if you're going in through a particular entry, you leave a different way if you can. You never go in and out the same way. You change it. Why would the terrorists choose to attack us again in the same method? They're not going to do planes again. Over and done with.
You don't think that they would do it just to show, look at how stupid you are. Not only did we do it to you once, but we came back and we did it to you again to shake the confidence even more.
Under the assumption that we didn't participate in the first time.
Right.
You know, how is it that there was a stand down that day? How did the terrorists know that our planes couldn't go into the air? My book shows you the documents that were never shown to the 9/11 Commission.
And is this correct? Now, help me on this, Governor Ventura. Again, I've heard so many different things, and I've read so many different things. I start to get lost in the 9/11 attacks.
Yep.
But there was debris found, of course, at the 9/11 site in New York City.
Yep.
There was the debris found in the field, but there was no debris seen at the site of the Pentagon.
No, not at all. And also what's interesting at the New York City site is that, did you know there were over 1,000 cars on the ground that were burnt and toasted?
No.
Now, how would that happen? From two planes hitting a building and the building's collapse. And some of these cars were as far away as the FDR, six blocks away. They exploded into flames. There's cars that were flipped on their back, and yet the photos show the leaves weren't blown off the trees. What happened there that day?
What do you suppose happened there?
I do a lot of research, and I read one interesting book that always remember in the 1980s, we were going to create Star Wars, right?
Right.
Well, they're always 20 years ahead of what we know they got.
Right.
And who's to say they didn't? Star Wars was designed to stop rockets from hitting our country.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that there could well have been one scenario is a weapon was used that day that was very much like a microwave. You know how you can put a piece of chicken on a piece of paper plate and you can burn the chicken and the plate's okay?
Right.
Well, how is it that all these papers were flying all over Manhattan and yet the cars were burning and the paper didn't?
Much like sticking a spoon or a fork into the microwave, it's going to spark and ignite.
Exactly.
Right. Well, that's interesting.
You're following the scenario now.
I've got 2 minutes left with you tonight, Governor. Just
a
quick...
Anyway, a neat book to read.
Yes.
Is called Where Did the Towers Go by Dr. Judy Wood. She's a PhD physics.
Where Did the Towers Go by Dr. Judy Wood.
Yeah, pick that up and read it, and you'll find some very interesting questions posed. Like, how could there be 1,000 or 1,000 toasted cars? And on these cars, only the metal was toasted, not the plastic or the upholstery.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting stuff?
It definitely makes you think, and it makes you think that it's time we start reassessing our government and who's policing who and,
exactly.
And what do we need to do to take
and
back
I'm trying to warn
our life.
You know, I'll finish like this if I can be so bold.
Please.
This summer or this winter in Mexico, I read some Hunter Thompson. And so much of what Hunter wrote about in the 60s and 70s came true. He warned us and we didn't listen. Hunter's gone now, and I would like to assume his role. I'm out there trying to warn us to pay attention because governments can go bad, including ours, and we better be vigilant or it'll happen before we know it.
And ultimate power does corrupt absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's been there forever. Governor Ventura, thank you so much for coming and spending some time here with us this evening.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it because, you know, it allows me to vent a little bit, and it also exercises our First Amendment rights because the First Amendment is for unpopular speech, not necessarily popular. Popular doesn't need protection.
You are correct, sir. Thank you. I'll be seeing you tomorrow at Borders. Our guest, Jesse Ventura, the governor, 63 documents the government doesn't want you to read. Pick up the book. Thank you very much for tuning in and spending your evening here with us. And thank you to Governor Jesse Ventura. We'll be back again tomorrow night with a brand new show, Darkness Radio.
So there you go. There's the first half of the program here on Beyond the Darkness on a Way Back Wednesday. Jesse Ventura, former governor of the state of Minnesota. Some interesting stuff there in that first half. Stay right there. Don't you dare move, because in the second half, we have the host of Coast to Coast AM, George Norrades, coming up next here on Beyond the Darkness. Welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Tim Dennison for Dave Schrader on a Way Back Wednesday. And in the second half of the program, this was an interview that I know Dave and I were really excited for, in that it was the first time that we got to sit down with someone that we had really gotten a chance to listen to for a lot of years and admired and got to dig into the brain of, and that was George Norrie. And we had a lot of fun with it, and we hope that you'll have a lot of fun listening to it as well. So let's dig into it. Let's creep into the mind of the host of Coast to Coast AM. Ladies and gentlemen, here's George Norrie.
Good evening and welcome. You're tuned in to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Joining me this evening, Mr. Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
Good evening.
Well, tonight is an exciting night for us. A lot of stuff going on. We've been talking about this for the last week. Tonight, after our show, you're going to be able to tune in to Coast, the premier paranormal radio show heard across the world with George Norrie. And I get to sit in with George tonight and be his special guest. Things have been kind of turned around on me where I get to talk about the paranormal and my experiences. But to make it all fair, ladies and gentlemen, joining us this evening, we were lucky enough to land George Norrie to be the guest on our show, so that we could bridge that gap, give you a little opportunity to hear more about the host you hear on Coast to Coast that continues our journey into the strange and unusual every night. George Norrie is the host of America's top overnight radio show, Coast to Coast AM, which is broadcast over 500 radio stations, as well as streamed over the internet to more than 10 million people a night. George is also the co-author of a number of books. He's hosted specials on the Sci-Fi Channel and is the current reigning king of late night radio. His new book, Talking to the Dead, was just released, and it's our esteemed honor to be joined this evening by the one and only Mr. George Norrie. Good evening, Mr. Norrie.
Hey, David, my pleasure. It's good to be back in Minneapolis, St. Paul, by the way. I lived there for 1 year back in 1978-79 and had a great time. And those were the days when it snowed in November and didn't melt until the end of April.
That's right. You lived a lifetime in that 1 year, didn't you, right here in Minneapolis?
Sure did. We used to keep our cars plugged in. Do they still do that out there?
Yes, we do. Unfortunately, we have to. It gets an Arctic crazy cold. I'm from Chicago originally. Moving out here was a totally different perspective for me. Even coming off the lakefront cold, I've never felt anything like Minnesota's happy enough to deliver to us. I'm excited to have you on the show, George. As Tim and I started our show just going on 7 years ago this January 1st, one of the things that always inspired us was the amazing work that Art Bell and that you brought to the radio show Coast to Coast AM. And it inspired us to bring a different lock in a little bit earlier in the evening for our local listeners, because, as you know, having been in Minnesota, a lot of people don't make it up past midnight, and we wanted to give an alternative out there. But you've always been a great inspiration. I love listening to your style and the way that you do your interviews. But I'm curious, as you said, you started out here, you've had a varied career in broadcasting. Prior to taking over as the primary host for Coast to Coast AM and getting involved in the show early on with Art Bell, what were your thoughts on the paranormal and conspiracy theories and topics like that?
David, it was the search for the mysteries, the unusual, the supernatural, the paranormal that really pushed me and fueled me to go into broadcasting ever since I was a little kid. I had a out-of-body experience when I was about 11. Had no idea what it was, went to the library at the time, we didn't have computers, and, you know, I stumbled into books on astral projection, and I saw pictures, sketches of the astral body leaving the physical body, and I said, oh my gosh, that's what happened to me, and I was just immersed in that, and I could not stop. And then one day, my mother brought me home a book by Walter Sullivan. He was the New York Times science writer at the time, called We Are Not Alone. And it was about his theory that there was intelligent life in the universe. And I was obsessed with that too. So at a young age, I went out and got books on UFOs. I joined NICAP, which at the time was the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. It was based in Washington, D.C., put together by a group of ex-military people to study UFOs. And I did that. I did all of that. And that's what I wanted to do for a career. And I never stopped.
Wow, that's phenomenal. I mean, putting it out there at that early of an age and being able to follow and continue on to that trend and actually, you know, hit that potential, which actually your first two books that you co-wrote with William Burns seems to fit some of that angle of how to set that goal and make through decisions in your life to take that regard. And we'll talk a little bit about your other books later on in the show as well. But I'm curious, when you're doing the show and you're talking to these guests, and Coast to Coast AM is on 7 nights a week, and you'll hear George hosting usually Monday through Friday on the shows, and going through this plethora of guests that you've had over the years, is there any segment of the paranormal or the supernatural that you just have a really hard time getting behind or believing in, no matter how sincere your guest is on the subject?
Well, what I try to do, David, is let the guests talk about their story, their case, their issue, without me trying to pull them down, destroy them. It's not my role for the audience to make up its own mind. That's the goal of Coast to Coast. I mean, I come from a hard news background in addition to being interested in the paranormal. You know, and I could go after every guest every time. And it's not that kind of show. I mean, I don't want it to be argumentative. I don't want, you know, we challenge, of course. But at the same time, the guest is on to talk about his or her particular view. And then I want the audience to make it up. So what I tell people when they ask me this question, I simply say, you know what, you'll never know what my view is, because that's not important. What's important is what the views are of the guest and what the audience thinks about that. And so they can make up their own mind. So I try to be the facilitator as opposed to somebody who's out to destroy a guest or to bring him up.
Oh, and I totally respect that. And we've tried to follow that same methodology on the show for the last 6 years here, giving the chance for the guest to shine and really share their information. As you have probably found, it's almost like religion. You know, there's so many different factions and so many different beliefs, and something that may come off sounding completely bizarre and unbelievable to you. Oftentimes on our radio show, that's when we get the most feedback and emails of people saying, I'm so glad you had that guest on. I felt so alone for so long that I'm the only one that's had this experience. And now I know that this is something that's, you know, worldwide, and that other people are dealing with the same thing. So we're the firm belief as you are to, you know, treat the guest respectfully. But I, you know, when you're researching the paranormal and you have all these people coming to you, even though it's not our job so much to judge on what it is, I'm just curious, is there, when you get into some of these interviews, are there ever any points when you hear this that it just sounds so fantastical that it's almost impossible for you to believe or continue on the interview?
What I try to avoid is someone taking advantage of somebody financially. Of course, a lot of people write books. They have little DVDs on things that they do. That's one thing. But if there's outright fraud involved, or they're out to really try to rake in cash from people, you know, send money to our donation, that's when I step in. I have kicked off on this program several guests over the last 10 years, and they are not coming back because they did things like that. They did things that I felt weren't above board, and that's what I try to avoid. You know, we're in an industry, David. It's entertainment, it's informational, it's fun, it's informative. And we have a mix of all that all the time. So, you know, even when I used to listen to Art Bell and I would hear somebody disappear over Area 51, I was skeptical. You know, I sat back and said, oh, come on now, this didn't happen. Art, you're making this up. But it was fun enough and interesting enough to let your mind wander a little bit and say, you know what, but maybe it's possible. Maybe it's possible. And it's that thought, the maybe it's possible end, that I think makes Coast to Coast what it is. It allows people to just let their minds wander, and they can decide what they want. Are we being visited by extraterrestrials? Is there life after death? Is Bigfoot out there? Are all these things occurring? Some of us say yes, some of us say no, but the important thing is let your mind wander. Open up your mind to the possibilities that these things could exist, and it'll make you a different person.
Now, you said that when you started as a youngster, your interest was because of your own out-of-body experience, your own astral projection, and then reading everything you could on UFOs. Is there still one topic that really lights George Norrie up when you do the show? One faction of this that you really get psyched about hearing more information about?
David, believe it or not, every topic psychs me out. Whether we talk about luck, whether we talk about current events with that coast-to-coast twist to it, you name it, whether it's a weather pattern story, all these stories just turn me on. I get excited about all of them. I get excited about the guests who come in to tell us about what's happening as well. So even though one might say, do you like Bigfoot stories over UFOs, or do you like alternative medicine over, you know, this story about, you know, maybe war with Iran? The answer is I like them all because they're all important to us, either informationally or for fun and entertainment purposes. And that's the way I look at it. So every time I come in and do a show, I'm excited about that program. I'm excited about you on our next program because it's different. You're a fresh guest for us. And that's what I think keeps this program moving along.
And those are fantastic points. Are there topics that you've discussed? And, you know, as you're hearing the different things from the war to, you know, aliens to different agendas that are going on, have you ever found yourself starting to get a little bit paranoid about the world around us and the government that's supposed to be here to take care of us? When you hear, you know, high-ranking government officials and people involved in NASA and in the different military branches of the things that they're hiding from us as Americans, does it start to make you uncomfortable knowing that this actually is going on out there?
Paranoid, no. Concerned, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we try to seek the truth. And before I started doing Coast to Coast, David, you know, I wasn't a believer in the one world government theory. I really didn't even know about it.
Mm-hmm.
But then as I interviewed people and studied it and got to know more and more people involved in things like this, I changed in a big way. And now I'm convinced that it's the other way around, that, you know, there is a group out there that wants to control and manipulate and do things. And that concerns me, that they want to whittle away freedoms of people, whether you live in the United States or Canada or anywhere else, and for their own self-purposes, their own greed, they want to be out on top, and they want everybody else to follow them like the Pied Piper would. And that concerns me a lot. And one of the messages that we try to convey on Coast to Coast nearly every day is that, you know, we're going to be doing this for as long as we can, and nobody's going to muffle us. And we're going to continue to shout from the rooftops so that people will wise up and not let tyranny occur.
Has there ever been a topic that you've been approached with where you felt pressure from maybe a government alarm, anything like that, to not pursue or not talk about? You know, we love all these great sci-fi novels and books and movies. And, you know, when they start to scratch the surface and realize this, we have the Men in Black come to visit us. And, you know, there are these things. Has that ever happened to Coast to Coast where you felt pressured not to continue on a topic or to explore it any further?
Fortunately not. I've never been approached by some kind of government official, some kind of black ops person. I've never been approached by company management to quash a story ever in my life. And my broadcasting life spans back to 1969. So I've been lucky. Does it happen? I think so, probably. Has it happened to us? Nope, not yet. And if it did, I'd simply tell them, I'm sorry, we're not going to stop doing what we're doing. And we're going to keep forging ahead.
Has there been any topics that you've covered in the years that you've done Coast to Coast that have been so disturbing to you that you know that this is just something I never want to talk about again? I don't want to delve in any further. I don't want to know these things because it is so unnerving to me as just a person and spiritually or any of those different dynamics.
I guess you could say the Ouija board story that we have handled and that I stopped an experiment on the air was a little disjarring to me. That was an experiment where I was going to have a Ouija board. I had some experts in the studio, and we were going to do a Ouija board routine. And I started getting emails from people who said, you know, I'm scared. Please don't do this. I started getting emails from people who said, we're having a pizza party. Please go ahead and do this.
Right.
But I had three guests on, and one wanted me to go ahead with it. One was on the ropes, and the other one said, if you do this, I'm walking off the air. That was old Jordan Maxwell. And, you know, I sat back, and while on the air, David, I made the decision, I'm not going to do this. Not that a Ouija board scares me, but I felt that there were a lot of people out there that could probably conjure up some kind of spirit or entity, and I didn't want to be responsible for that, so I canceled it. And, you know, I took a little heat from some people who were expecting it, who wanted it, but I think I did the right thing. So stories like that, demonic stories are a little rough to handle with people because, you know, we're dealing with one of two things. Either someone is truly mentally ill and needs help, or they've been truly possessed by something demonic and they need help too. And sometimes I don't know which is which.
Right. And that is where it gets very dodgy as a host for a show, I would assume, to, you know, when we start hearing some of these, what would normally be considered outlandish tales, and then we start hearing the violence and the what's going on, how deep do we go into this story? And does that in itself start to, you know, much like your Ouija board experiment and people fearful that if they listen to the show or were involved in this in some way that they may have negative things happen to them by giving energy to a darker subject? Does that in fact feed it? Does it make it larger? Does it ever have a, you know, concern for you?
Well, it might. And we wrestle with this all the time, that if you continue to do stories about the dark side, and if you do stories on devil worshipers and Satanists, are you feeding that kind of negative energy? And sometimes I think, yeah, I do. But I think in the long run, if more and more people are aware of what's going on out there, these different kinds of circumstances, that they're going to win out. I've always been a believer that good beats evil. Might not happen right away, but in the long term, it probably will. And that's why we keep pushing ahead with that.
Can you explain to us a little bit about, and that was actually the question I was going to follow up with you on. You know, you've co-authored this book with the amazing Rosemary Ellen Guiley on Talking to the Dead, which we're going to discuss more in the second half of the program. And it had brought to mind that Ouija board session that you were going to do on air. What was the intention of the experiment? Was it something that you would just be doing solely in studio? Would listeners be pulling out their Ouija board and doing it along with you to see if there was some kind of global consciousness answer? What was the intent of the initial experiment to begin with?
Initially, I wanted to see what, if anything, would happen. Many years ago, when I was doing a show in St. Louis, I had a Ouija board in the studio, and all kinds of horrendous things happened. My computers went down, lights on the board started flickering, my phone banks got all screwed up. While I was on the air, and I'm going, this is ridiculous. So I gave the Ouija board during a commercial break to my producer, Howard Morton, at the time. This is in St. Louis. And as soon as that Ouija board was taken out of the studio, the computers worked, the board worked, the phone bank was okay again. And I went, God, this is strange. But it was gone, unbeknownst to me, David. Howard had given away the Ouija board to one of our newsmen. His name was Daryl. Daryl took it home with him. The next day, Daryl was fired from the station. He was a good newsman. He was always prompt, always came into work, but he was just fired. And I ran into him probably 6 years later. I said, hey, Daryl, how are you? He said, oh, I'm doing all right, not as good as I should be. And I'm saying, what happened to you? He said, funny thing, George. Ever since I took that Ouija board from Howard, my life has gone downhill. He said, you know, I got fired the next day. I said, yeah, I had heard about that. And he said, everything fell apart. It took me a long time to get a job. I still don't have one I like. My relationship was screwed up. You know, I had some health issues. It's the worst thing that ever happened to me. He said, I got rid of it. But he said, I think that Ouija board did something to me. And, you know, when I heard that story, I went, wow, this is unbelievable. So there's that unknown barometer out there that things like the Ouija board, as much as they seem like fun, maybe we shouldn't dabble in that stuff. Maybe we shouldn't play with it. So you need to be careful.
Do you regret the decision to pull the plug on the experiment?
No, I don't. Primarily because of most of my audience. A lot of these people probably would have tried to have conjured up spirits or something, and who knows what would have happened to them. So, you know what? I took the high road, the safe road, and I don't regret it.
So you just basically had said, you know, maybe it's just a good idea not to mess with the Ouija boards. And, you know, the stories that we've heard through the years, never, you know, it's never good. We never hear, hey, I won the lottery, I, you know, met the woman of my dreams, I you know, got all this because I was playing with the Ouija board. It always starts off with, you know, all the horrible things that are happening. And when we dig a little deeper, it turns out that the Ouija board was the beginning, the catalyst of this. Do you think that it has more to do with intent of how a Ouija board is used? Because people are, you know, most people use it as a thrill ride. It's a way to spook each other and try to make that, you know, connection to Elvis or President Kennedy or, you know, or Bloody Mary or some other crazy person that they're trying to get in touch with. Do you think that if you go into it with the intent of spooking each other and having that experience, that that may be more to what happens and why so many dark things seem to happen? Because there are some amazing people that have written entire books using the help of the Ouija board, which are very supportive, loving, good-natured, good information. And they go into it with an intention of light, love. And when things start going bad, they simply put the board away, and that's the end of it.
I think intent does play a huge role in some of these things, David. I think that if people will it to be, it shall be. Whether you do it for yourself, your future, your job, your career, or conjuring up an evil spirit with a Ouija board. If you believe it, if you really want to play with it, I think you could probably do that too. So you're absolutely right. Intent plays a huge part in all of these things. I just didn't want to be the catalyst to help promote this. And, you know, I was probably wrong. I was wrong. I milked it for 3 weeks on the air, you know. and then, you know, when it came down to it, I didn't do it.
Do you consider yourself a sensitive, George?
I'm pretty intuitive. I have some psychic abilities. I'm definitely not as tuned in as most people might be that have been doing this for a long time. But there's no question. I mean, something happened to me a long time ago that honed these skills, that tuned me up. And I'm extremely perceptive and intuitive, and I use it, David, all the time. You know, it is one time saved my life as I was going through an intersection, and I had a green light. Well, you know, something in my little head said, "Stop, George, don't go through." I mean, of course you're going to go through. You got a green light, for crying out loud. You got people behind you. But I slowed down. I came to a stop at the intersection, right where I would have gone through the middle. Some guy went through his red light, and he would have broadsided me on my side of the car, and God knows what would have happened to me. What mechanism is in your body that creates that? You know, is it a natural thing? Do we have this antenna out that can see the future and you react to it? Maybe that's possible. Or is it merely intuition, the ability to remote view, to do things where you can see things in the future? And your mind registers it. Or is it a combination of both of them? And I'm beginning to think maybe it's both.
Do you think that, you know, doing the type of work that you do and opening yourself up, immersing yourself to the supernatural and the paranormal and opening those doors within us, do you think that that might be what opens up psychic or empathetic or perhaps even mediumistic tendencies in people?
I think the belief system helps open up your intuitiveness and your psychic abilities. This positive feeling that you can do it, that this is real, without negativity, without denial, has a great part to do. And I practice it nearly every day, right before I go to sleep in my dream state. You know, I concentrate on events and things that I want to happen the next day or so. And generally they do. You know, it's not to say that I'm not, you know, without tragedy in my life. My father died a week ago at the age of 88. I did not expect that. He had fallen and went downhill very quickly. So, you know, we're human beings. We are subject to ups and downs of life. But the secret is to be able to pull yourself out of it and to keep moving ahead, to keep going forward. And if you can do that, I think it'll open up all kinds of psychic abilities that you never thought you had.
Our guest this evening is George Norrie, the host of America's top overnight radio show, Coast to Coast AM. Your brand new book, which is Talking to the Dead, which was co-authored with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, just came out in October. I want to talk real briefly about your other two books to kind of let our listeners know about this as well. You co-wrote them with William J. Burns, who people might recognize from UFO Hunters. And the first book is called Worker in the Light, Unlock Your Five Senses and Liberate Your Limitless Potential. Tell us a little bit about that book and what you wanted your readers to take away from it.
We wanted to teach people, David, how they could tap into this incredible power that lies within us, this incredible power that's also in the universe. And, you know, we went through different stages and steps. So when we put together Worker in the Light and then Journey to the Light, which were the real stories, as you mentioned, that people had written in about and how things had changed their life, that's exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted it as a self-help book to teach people what I went through, the journeys I went through, what I had to do working in the light, and then things they could do to do the same thing. And Bill and I, Bill, of course, super guy, you know, he put together the UFO Hunters that was on the networks. He is the editor of UFO Magazine and a great prolific writer. I got to know him when I was doing my local show in St. Louis back in 1997, when he had written the book about Philip Corso and the day after Roswell. You know, he wrote that with Corso. And we just got together and hit it off. And then one day I said, you know, Bill, if ever gets a chance where we can write some books together, let's do it. You know, I've got this, you know, this years and years of knowledge of things that we've done and people I've talked to. And I said, and you are a great researcher. And so we did. And Worker in the Light was our first book, then Journey to the Light, second. Then, of course, the third, Talking to the Dead with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. But all of it, David, surrounds the Coast to Coast genre, the topics that we do on a regular basis on Coast to Coast. I mean, they're directly related to those issues, whether it is talking to the dead or spirituality or psychic ability or training people to be a little more sensitive so they can pick up on things. That's what the show is, and that's what the books are.
2012 is coming upon us very quickly. There are many people that all they know are from the doomsayer versions of the TV specials, which sell and are sexy and creepy, and people want that feel when they tune into them, but they're going away with the sense of dread. In your books, you talk about unlocking these potentials. Do you believe, as many now are seeing, that 2012 is not the end of life? It's not the end of our planet, but the rebirth, and that it's books like Worker in the Light and Finding Your Spiritual Self. Do you think that it's a journey to light? That's what we're going to be moving into next. It's finding that enlightenment to give us the abilities to escalate or elevate our lives to the next level.
I've changed my opinion somewhat about 2012. Initially, when I first started doing this and interviewing people, I truly thought it was going to be a planet-wide catastrophe. I have tempered that. I still think there's going to be some kind of solar event. I think the Mayans were experts in astronomy, and I think there's some kind of tie-in with that. But I do not think we're talking about a planet ender or anything like that. And it is going to be a time of change and enlightenment for a lot of people. We're going to be going into a new era. And, you know, I hope that people will understand that we've got to stand up to tyranny and oppressive governments around this planet and make this a place for everybody to enjoy. It's a short time on this planet, a very short time indeed, and you might as well make the best out of it. And, you know, if we could only do that as a world, we'd have a great place to live in.
A lot of the experts are referring to what we're going through in the solar flares and the volcanic eruptions and the earthquakes and the tsunamis and the superstorms that are blowing through as the birthing pains for this new enlightenment. It's purging and shaking things up and taking us out of our paradigm and current belief systems. What kind of credence do you give to that, if you put any thought into that?
Well, it is. It is a birthing. I mean, there's no question about it. We're going through a metamorphosis right now, where humanity is changing dramatically. Unfortunately, the small few at the top are the greedy ones, the evil ones, and they're the ones who control. You know, by and large, I'm a believer that primarily most people are good. You know, they care about other people, but they're not in the power seat. They're not in the position to make the changes that need to be made. That will change one day, and hopefully sooner than later.
December 21st, 2012. Where are we going to find George Norrie?
George Norrie will be on the air. It'll be a Friday night. I'll be doing Coast to Coast with a number of guests who have talked about 2012 over the last several years, and we'll see what happens. You know, will I go to static and I'm gone? Or, you know, will the planet end? Will it just be nothing? Will it be like Y2K? It popped up and it went and nothing happened. We'll see, but that's where I'll be.
Will you surround yourself with friends and family at the studio just in case?
Probably not. I think by that date, I'll probably be back in the cave in St. Louis because it'll be close to Christmas. So I'll be there. So friends and family will be around, but I'm not going to bring them to the cave. They'll probably be hunkered down somewhere in their own little place.
Well, let's talk about the new book, and we're going to take that through this segment and through the final segments for this evening. The new book is called Talking to the Dead. And tell us a little bit about this book.
We're really proud of this. Rosemary and I collaborated on this book, David, for years. And finally, we just decided, let's just put it on paper. Let's get it done. We have covered stories of EVPs, electronic voice phenomena. We have looked at devices that people have historically tried to create to talk to the dead. So we thought, you know what, this is going to be an interesting book. It'll be a fascinating topic. Let's see what we can do. So we went way back. We looked at things that Edison tried to create, the mini box, Frank's box, SpiritCom, other techniques of EVPs that people have been trying to do for years to try to communicate with the other side. And, you know, we put together a number of different facets. If you were to ask me right now, can we do this without any question, I would have to say, I don't know. I don't know. I've heard some strange things coming out of some of these devices. And garbled, no doubt, but strange. And, you know, sometimes I think, all right, they're picking up some kind of radio transmission of some old radio show or something. But I don't think that's the case. They're picking up something, voices from somewhere, and they very well could be the dead. And what they do is they communicate through these devices. They want to pass messages on to us. They think, oh, my gosh, hey, here's our way to really talk to these people. We can talk to the living now. And, they're trying that. But maybe one day when science gets better and technology gets better, we're going to be able to do this, just like that.
And there is, in the book, you talk about incredible ways that the human race has tried to bridge that chasm from life to the afterlife to make this connection. Do you think that we're any closer today, realistically, to doing that than when Thomas Edison kind of pondered the likelihood of spirit communication?
Probably not. Even though technology has gotten better, I wish we would have had a Thomas Edison around. He might have been able to make the device that we need to do. I still think that the best way and the most simplest way to communicate with the dead is in your dream state. I think that you literally get on that same plateau as the spirit world, and it's much easier to communicate that way.
When you were doing the research for this book, have you had much opportunity to go into haunted locations with Rosemary or other investigators to actually hands-on collect EVP, electronic voice phenomena, and see it happen firsthand, not just somebody bringing the information to you?
Only one I've been at, David, was in St. Louis at the Lemp Mansion, and that's a strange place. Several people had committed suicide there. It was owned by a family that they were, you know, beer magnets, and strange things happened there. People were sitting for dinner one day, and a guy was making fun of the place, saying there are no spirits, they're not here. And he put his hand under the table, and he came back out, and his hand was full of butter. Somebody had put butter all over his hand, and this guy was serious. He wasn't doing it. Something happened to him, and he was a believer after that. But the Lemp Mansion was probably the most haunted spot that I've spent a lot of time at.
with the book and Talking to the Dead that you co-wrote with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. It just came out in October. It's available now through Amazon.com and most of your brick and mortar bookstores. Do you, out of the different equipment and devices that you mentioned earlier, has there been one that you feel is a little bit closer, a little better, that it's intrigued you more than just the standard audio recorder and asking questions into the silence or into the sound of, you know, a fan going or white noise?
You know, I like Frank's box, which was a prior evolution of what's coming out now. The mini box has come out after that. But I like Frank's box. It's done by an inventor who was a ham radio operator named Frank. And, you know, it's interesting. It's a different kind of technique. And this guy's dead serious about this. And he has picked up incredible signals, very strange sounds. Originally, he didn't know what he was getting. And he's convinced that he's communicating with the other side. And, you know, these are simple little radio-type devices that he's tinkered with. And I don't know. I'm not a technological whiz. But, you know, that's a pretty good one. But I do think as software and computers get smaller and smaller and smaller, that maybe one day we might be able to communicate a little easier with the other side.
Our guest this evening is George Norrie, the host of Coast to Coast. And again, I'll be George's guest this evening, so stay tuned. It's going to be an intriguing night. Our guest has a new book out called Talking to the Dead that was co-authored with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who has been a guest on our show numerous times, and talking about the different ways and methods of communicating with the other side. And I know we were talking about some of the different devices, George, and some of the different things that have taken place even in the last 10 to 15 years. And you said that, you know, you don't know for much further along than when Edison pontificated about this back in the beginning as to where we are now. Yet there is, you know, technology has really made some leaps and bounds in this. Do you think that we'll make that leap to that bridge, that gap sometime in the next 10, 20, 50? Or do you think it's even still another 100 years out before we have that ability?
I think it's going to happen by accident, David. Something's going to happen, whether we stumble into a piece of technology that may have been developed or will be developed in the future, but it's going to probably happen that way. I don't think someone's going to develop a device today and sit back and start turning it on going, listen to these great voices from the other side. Something strange will probably happen where people will pick things up, signals, you know, like what SETI's trying to do, searching for, you know, extraterrestrial voices coming from radio waves. You know, they may find it. It may come across. I think that's what's going to probably happen on this. Now, if you ask me, do I believe in the spirit world? It's absolutely. I mean, this planet, this universe was not constructed by accident. It is not a fluke. I love interviewing scientists who believe that there's order to the universe, but they won't take that step and talk about God or anything like that. But this is... this is very simple formula to me, and that is whatever has happened to create life has also created death in the other side, and that it's a very normal occurrence. It's a very normal part of this existence, and it's there. It's there as plain as I can see.
I'm intrigued when we're talking about the new book, Talking to the Dead, which is about spirit communication. You were talking about how SETI has been doing that as well and trying to make that communication with outer space. One thing I'm curious about, George, and if I don't know if Rosemary had brought this up. I know I'd been involved in some experiments with her using Frank's box, Shack Hack, some of the different versions of the communication devices, toys like the Ovilus, you know, the PX and devices mm-hmm. along those lines. And something I found interesting, I wonder if... it's Seth Shostak, if I'm saying it properly, correct?
Yes. Yes.
He has the antenna pointed out and listening there. And I wonder if he's tuned into the wrong location, because I'll tell you a very interesting phenomena that we've had at many different locations while using these different devices are voices that are calling out and asking for Seth.
That's interesting.
And I wonder if he's pointing the antenna in the wrong direction. Are we, instead of focused in outer space, should we be focused right here into a parallel universe, a parallel dimension? Is the communication coming through and we're just not pointing the right way?
Well, that's very possible. It's a vast universe. They've got this array of telescopes. And, you know, who knows if they're pointed in the right direction? They've been having some funding problems lately. They picked up some renewal funds, so they're starting again. But you're right. I mean, they could be pointed to the wrong spot. And every time we pick up a story that Kepler has found another Earth-like planet, I wonder if SETI says, okay, let's aim over there. You never know. We've had Seth on the program before. And, you know, he's a believer that there's life out there. They keep pushing it, and he hopes one day they're going to hear it come over the SETI telescopes.
Well, being an avid researcher and liking the UFO phenomena as much as you have and following that as well, you know, my producer Tim has an interesting theory when you're talking about the things that are coming up with 2012 and the changes. And we're hearing about these large UFOs, some that are the size of football fields and are 10 stories tall, buildings that run silently. And Tim's theory has been that these are man-made, that these are created. These are the arcs that are going to take us to Kepler's new worlds, you know, to find these new homes. What do you make of that? Do you believe that maybe more of what we see is our own device as opposed to that coming from other planets and galaxies to visit us?
Could be. Michael Cremo thinks that civilizations are hundreds of millions of years old, and who knows what kind of technology, if he's correct, that we might have possessed. I always like to think back to the movie Contact with Jodie Foster,
right,
where Ellie was sitting in that device, the plans sent from extraterrestrials that we built. And I think it might be something like that. I think this universe has portals, whether they're black holes, who knows what, or wormholes. But one day we're going to find out how to travel through them. And we'll be able to get from point A to point B instantly. And, you know, I just had Michio Kaku on Coast to Coast, the physicist. And his thoughts now that black holes are portals to other universes. And, I mean, what an incredible theory. Who would have thought about that 20 years ago? But now we have real physicists, great theoretical physicists, talking about other universes, multiverses, that are connected to this one via black holes, which is amazing.
And it's intriguing, too, by talking about these multi-universes and these parallel dimensions. George, so many of the investigations that we've been a part of and have had guests on talking about, they're astonished because there are times they get audio back in their own voices as though they're responding from a different side. And if we are just a shade over from, you know, this universe to the next, could we be investigating in that same place just one step over and to the left, you know, just a jump to the left, if you will? And could we be picking up our own feedback and interaction between each other? Why are we getting these voices? Why are we getting answers to the questions that we're asking? Because on the other side, they're asking us and answering us in the same vein, trying to make that communication back and forth.
Well, look how we flip-flopped. In an instant, you've been interviewing me, and in an instant, I'll be interviewing you. Maybe that's the same in other universes, where we've got us in one situation, and then it's totally reversed in the other. And that's very, very possible.
What do you think, George, is the job of the media to report on things like UFOs and this phenomena? You know, there's such a covert feeling to all of this that we can't know, we shouldn't know because of the dangers that it could provide. And you know, we've talked about the government hiding things from us. And in my sense, I'm a firm believer. I think if the government comes forward and admits to us now that they know about UFOs, that's going to be more damaging to us as a country and could rock our foundation. Because obviously right now we all live in that kind of little cloud where it's, okay, maybe they're not. Maybe there really isn't this going on. But I'm afraid if they make that announcement, the belief in our government and that will fall apart completely, because now if they've lied to us about that, what else have they lied to us for our protection?
David, that's exactly why they will not make that announcement, because they have lied so long, they can't come out and say this. And so it'll be deny, deny, deny. The only way people will really ever find out is if government whistleblowers continue to come forward with information, as they have in the past, to talk about this. But do not expect government to come out, hold a little news conference and say, we've been visited and we're being visited. It's not going to happen that way.
Well, with about 2.5 minutes left, George, what do you feel our position is in the media to report on these stories? Should we do that, or is it undermining our own government?
Well, I think it's our responsibility to report on anything out there that could be factual, truthful, affect us in any way possible. And I think that the media does itself a disservice if it just completely neglects these kinds of stories or laughs about them as they used to years ago. They're taking it a little more seriously now. But I think they have a responsibility to report on just about everything. And I got to tell you, if a Bigfoot was discovered tomorrow and it was out there for the world to see, it would be a major story, even in the mainstream media. They tend to jump on board when they have to, and we'll see what happens.
In 2 minutes left here, George, in the next 50 years, what do you believe is most probable to have happen? Proof beyond a shadow of a doubt of extraterrestrial affairs, Bigfoot, or communication with the other side?
Or maybe all of the above, David. I wish I could look into my crystal ball and predict exactly where we're going to go, what we will unravel. Time will tell whether it's, you know, the continual push of psychic connection with the world, whether somebody finds a Bigfoot indeed, or a UFO lands on the White House lawn, or, you know, the dead begin to talk to us. Could be all of the above or none of the above. But the mysteries are out there. We continue to chase them. And you know what? I think that's one of the great parts of living, the fact that we can pursue these mysteries of life and look for the answers. And whether we get them or not, the chase is the important thing.
Our guest this evening, George Norrie, host of Coast to Coast AM. George, it's been a complete honor to and a privilege to have you here joining us this evening and sharing your information and your wisdom and ideas on the different aspects of what we report on a nightly basis. And I thank you very much for being a part of our show and, more importantly, for also inviting me to be a part of Coast to Coast's world.
You're welcome, David. I look forward to it.
I do as well. Thank you very much to George Norrie, our special guest. Remember, the book is out and available right now, Talking to the Dead. It was released in October. George Norrie and Rosemary Ellen Guiley are the authors of that book. You can find it out in all the mainstream venues to find books. Phenomenal read. You are going to love it. Make sure to pick up a copy of that now.
So there you go, folks. There's the master himself, George Norrie, the host of Coast to Coast AM. And of course, you can hear George on almost 600 stations nationwide. You can check him out at coasttocoastam.com. And of course, remember to become a member of the Insiders Club when you're at coasttocoastam.com. It's less than 15 cents a day. You can check that out at coasttocoastam.com. And of course, don't forget about True Crime Tuesday, our true crime show. Be sure to check that out. It's easy enough. Just go over to darknessradio.com, click on the True Crime Tuesday banner, and it's only $5 a month for brand new shows every Tuesday. In months where there's five Tuesdays, you get five shows, and you get all of the archives, of course, that are sitting over there. You've got a lot of shows to catch up on. I'll just put it that way. Dave is back tomorrow. We've got brand new programming the rest of the week. I'm glad I got a chance to sit in with you guys and let you know that I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm ready to fight. And then Dave again is back tomorrow and Friday. Nothing wrong, just a day of transition. That's all. Here on Beyond the Darkness, we hope you had a good day and a chance to reminisce with us and had a good time listening to a few more of the archives that I got to dust off here today. For Dave Schrader, I'm Tim Dennis, and this has been another edition of Beyond the Darkness.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.